The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Harder, would you please move the minutes of March 12th?
Thank you, Chair Davids. I have looked over the minutes. They look correct to me. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Harder moves the minutes of March 12th. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, today we are going to skip around a little bit here. I know that members have other committees to go to have bills heard. So we're going to start off today with House File 1933, Representative Herr's bill, Chair Herr's bill. So we've got, there's no amendments, it looks like to me, and so we'll have to testify. We've got a Ben Fisher and a Hunter Cantrell. Welcome to the Tax Committee, folks. Representative Herr, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. In front of you is House File 1933, and this bill seeks to increase the maximum student loan credit. This bill has been in front of this committee a couple of different bienniums and was included in 2013, but did not make it across the finish line. I think that we all know the issues with our crushing debt, student loan debt. I had a ton of statistics and information available for today, but I thought in the interest of time to save all of you and just knowing that, I mean, our student loan debt continues to balloon and grow bigger. I will say that this bill is really important, and I want to point out that the original brainchild of this wonderful bill is Chair Davids. And so I want to build off of his work. Just to go over the bill itself and what it's doing, there's just two main things that this bill does. It modifies the existing student loan credit in two ways. It increases the maximum credit from $500 to $1,000. And then it also makes the credit refundable. So if your obligation isn't as great as what your refund is, you get to just have that back. And so that is, those are the two main changes with that. I will just also point out there is a fiscal note to this, and I think that just from the pure aspect of how much this has decreased, we should just absolutely pass this bill and get it across the finish line. When we brought this bill forward a couple bienniums ago, the fiscal note was a couple of hundred million dollars because we actually was a much more robust bill. In the modifications of this bill, the fiscal note is, you know, a little over $15 million, and so I'm going to actually turn it over to my testifiers so that they can kind of share their stories, and then we can take any questions from our members. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Herr. If you please state your name, who represent, or for the record, please.
Hi, Ben Fisher.
And provide your testimony, please.
Hi, Chair, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Ben Fisher, a medical student at the University of Minnesota. I'm here to testify in favor of HF 1933.
Sure. What kind of student?
Medical student.
Do you do hips?
Not yet, no.
Maybe someday?
Maybe someday, yeah. Okay. I'll let you know.
Might need to talk to you afterwards. Okay. Please provide your testimony.
Okay. Throughout my time at the University of Minnesota, I've completed my undergraduate education, worked in research, and I'm currently pursuing my medical education. My partner, Becca, has also spent the entirety of her higher education at the University of Minnesota and is now working as a dietitian. Our journeys have required taking on substantial risk at each step. For me, it involved completing my undergraduate degree, gaining acceptance to medical school, passing boards, matching in a residency, and much more. Each step demands more time, energy, and most notably, money. Like many of my classmates, I come from a working class family and have had to rely on student loans to reach this point. Over time, my financial burden and concern for failing or falling short at each step have continued to weigh heavily on me. Today, I do not know how I would climb out of my debt if I did not finish my training at this point. While this bill will not solve all my debt concerns, I see it as a step in the right direction and will help provide financial relief to me, Becca, and families across Minnesota. Additionally, with rising college costs and the current uncertainty about the federal government's impact on educational access, bills like this can provide clarity to prospective students about higher education accessibility and encourage educational investment. I strongly urge you to support this bill and continue working towards improving education attainability in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, questions of the testifier? Thank you, sir. Your next witness, Chair Herr.
My name is Hunter Cantrell. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm a medical student as well at the University of Minnesota, and I'm here today to urge you to support Representative Herr and Lead Gomez's excellent bill, House File 1933, to provide relief for student loan borrowers. Now, it may surprise you that medical school is extremely expensive. I knew how much it cost going in, and I'm still surprised. I'm certain that someday I will have an income sufficient to repay my loans. Many professionals in healthcare who make caring for patients possible carry substantial student loan debt and still live paycheck to paycheck. Many borrowers in the middle and working class are struggling due to the high cost of living and stagnating wages we are seeing in our state and across our country. When someone chooses to go to college, this is an investment in our state's economy, but unfortunately the cost of obtaining an education has never been higher, often leaving many borrowers, especially in my generation, barely able to keep up with principal payments on top of a punitive system of interest accumulation. With the future of federal student loan forgiveness and repayment plans in jeopardy, this tax credit increase would mean more money in the pockets of hardworking Minnesotans, resulting in greater financial stability and economic growth for our state. Simply put, this bill is a stimulus not to big corporations, but to the middle and working classes at a time when it is desperately needed. And I encourage you to support the bill. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you, Mr. Cantrell. Any questions for members for Mr. Cantrell? Representative Hewitt.
Really quick, if you would care to share either, I was going to call him representative, either the medical student Cantrell or his soon-to-be colleague, could you give us a ballpark on your total debt and then what that payment is or what your colleagues' payments are, just a ballpark so we know what that layout is monthly.
Mr. Cantrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hewitt. I try not to look at that balance statement if I can avoid it, but, you know, ballparking it, at the end of the day, will be around $180,000 to $200,000 to pursue a medical education on top of my undergraduate education costs.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you.
That's kind of a personal question.
You want my Social Security number too?
just the last four digits.
I want to be empathetic to the cause here, Chair.
Good job, Representative.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions for either of the testifiers? Okay. Thank you, Representative Elkins.
Well, I think I had read recently that the average medical debt for a graduating medical student is something like $330,000.
Mm-hmm. Yikes. Okay. Any more questions for the two testifiers, Representative Joachim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe not for the two testifiers, but it's nice to see a former colleague here. And I have a daughter who has medical school debt as well, but I also have a daughter-in-law that has veterinarian debts, and folks should know that those of you who love your fur babies, veterinarians, it costs just as much to go to veterinarian school, and they make about a third when they come out. So it's even harder to pay back that debt.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Any other questions for members? Otherwise, we'll go to the department. Do you wish to testify on the bill? Okay, thank you. Not thank you that you're not testifying, but thank you for letting me know. Okay. Chair Gomez. Any wrap-up before we go to the author?
We'll just go to the author.
Okay, to the author for closing remarks.
Thank you, Chair Davids and committee members. I will just share that the average student loan debt is $34,000, though it is a lot less than medical students. The average student will not make the kind of money, as Representative Cantrell mentioned, that doctors will later on, and that even those they struggle with their debt. And, as we think about the future of our state and our demographic and the fact that we are not able to, our workforce continues to diminish, that students, families are actually putting off having children because of student loan debt. And we know that for a fact, when we look at the data and the information about people buying homes, about having children, about planning for their future. And so anything that we can do to help alleviate the debt that students are carrying will be helpful in bringing, attracting people to come into our state and to be working in our state. This particular bill does not put qualifications around where your debt comes from, whether it's private or public loans, whether you incurred that at a university here in Minnesota or not. Our goal is to ensure that people can start a life here in Minnesota and stay here and help us be the great state that we are. So I look for support from this committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Hurd. Representative Hurd renews her motion that House File 1933 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, everyone. Let's go next to Representative Johnson. Okay, Representative Johnson. Representative Johnson moves House File 1359. If you could please present your bill, Representative Johnson, and we'll go to your testifiers. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Davids and members of the committee. I would like to just point out, to begin with, the authors or co-authors of this bill that makes up a majority of this committee and has broad bipartisan support. So I just want to bring that up. And I know that's always been a goal of Chair Davids to get a lot of support. So today I'm presenting House File 1359, known as the SCORE Recycling Bill. I appreciate the attention this committee has given this issue in recent years and the dedication of 3% of the solid waste management tax to SCORE grants that was made last biennium. The bill builds on this recent progress and would fully address the allocation of revenue from the state's user tax on solid waste services. Currently, 27% of the solid waste management tax revenue is going into the general fund. I believe all the revenue from this tax should be used to manage our waste problems as was originally intended when the tax was created. SCORE grants, which are the primary source of state support for county waste management activities, only fund about 20% of the costs, with counties and property taxpayers footing the bill for the rest. As a former Washington County Commissioner, I know this all too well. I thank the many members of the committee for being co-authors on the House File 1359, and I will pass things off to my testifiers to share more about the bill.
Okay, Representative Johnson, I see we have two testifiers. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on the Johnson Bill, House File 1359? Okay, who would like to go first here? Mr. Papp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, my name is Kevin Papp. I serve as a Blue Earth County Commissioner. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 1359. In addition to being supported by the Blue Earth County, my comments today and those of my colleague, Commissioner Fran Miron, are offered on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota Intercounty Association, the Solid Waste Administrators Association, and the Partnership on Waste and Energy. These four organizations form a coalition of support for this effort. I'd like to start by thanking the legislature for acting in 2023 to direct 3% of the solid waste management tax to assist counties in managing our waste and keeping recyclables out of our landfills. House File 1359 continues that work by shifting the remaining 27% of the solid waste management tax over a period of years out of the general fund and into its originally planned purpose in meeting solid waste challenges. Counties are committed to handling solid waste properly. Counties must develop systems, meet regulatory requirements, and operate complex facilities to meet our mandated responsibilities. The financial burden of operating these systems is always increasing. The Minnesota Waste Management Act reduces risk to public health and the environment by moving waste from landfilling up the waste management hierarchy to the most preferred options: reduce, reuse, and recycle. The law also measures to ensure the safety of people who work with waste and address the risk of landfills. The state has spent over $500 million cleaning up landfills, and hundreds of millions are needed through 2050, not including the cost to clean up the freeway landfill. These funds are collected through taxes or insurance costs, a financial burden that will never go away. Blue Earth County utilizes SCORE funding to operate our county's recycling center. In Blue Earth County, we have a recycling rate of 45%, which exceeds both the MPCA's target recycling rate of 35% and Greater Minnesota's county average of 41%. In Blue Earth County, our annual cost of operating our recycling center exceeds our annual SCORE funding, leaving local resources responsible for those additional recycling efforts. Additional SCORE funding could provide for increased and new material management efforts, be utilized to improve hazardous waste diversion and further education, which is critical for increasing recycling rates across the state. The SCORE Task Force, created by Governor Perpich in 1988, recommended a tax based on the cost of trash, resulting in the solid waste management tax to help fund recycling and related programs. This task force recommended that all tax revenues go to the solid waste management. This is a user tax that now generates over $100 million annually, with 27%, approximately $31.7 million, going to the general fund where it is not used for waste management purposes. That should change. SCORE grants help counties meet our state-mandated recycling goals. SCORE grants fund recycling programs, the expansion of organics composting, efforts to reduce and reuse waste, and a robust drop-off system to keep problematic and toxic materials out of the trash disposal facilities. Recycling costs keep increasing, and the limited or volatile end markets for recyclable materials create instability. The reality is most of the costs are paid by local government. House File 1359 is one of the many policy solutions that will support improvements to our waste management system for more positive outcomes.
Thank you, Mr. Papp. I want to go to nonpartisan just a second. When the SCORE grants started back in the day, 100% went to the counties for recycling efforts, and now it's what percent? Who would answer that from nonpartisan? Mr. William or Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the question is how much of the solid waste tax goes to the SCORE grants?
Yeah.
Right now, this tax is dedicated. It is 70% goes to the Environment Fund. And then of that amount, an additional 3% is also dedicated for the SCORE grants.
And Ms. Temple, what was it originally?
Originally, I would have to check the handbook.
Okay.
And look for that.
That's fine. Okay, let's go to our next testifier. Commissioner from Washington County, please state your name and who you represent for the record and provide your testimony, please.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Hello, I'm Fran Miron, Washington County Commissioner, and I also serve as Chair of the Partnership on Waste Energy. I'm pleased to be here along with Blue Earth County Commissioner Kevin Papp. While solid waste management is carried out by a network of public and private entities, the state holds only counties responsible for meeting the state mandates. Despite this, less than 20% of the solid waste management tax revenues are allocated to SCORE grants to fund recycling and reuse programs. Washington County uses SCORE funding to manage our yard and wood waste operations, run our north and south environmental centers where residents bring recyclables, chemicals, electronics, food scraps, and other items that shouldn't be in the trash. And we use funds to host clinics and swap events for residents to reuse items. These efforts have been very popular with our residents. We had nearly 60,000 visitors at our South Environmental Center alone in 2024 and returned an estimated $1.5 million of reused product value to community households through our reuse rooms and swap events. That's more than the amount received in SCORE funding. But we also hear from our residents and municipal partners that there are items people still can't get rid of that shouldn't be in the trash, and they're in need of more of these services to make the behavior changes needed to reach our waste diversion goals. The graph that you're seeing on the screen here shows how counties in Minnesota have continually stepped forward to fund programs required by state, while the state's contribution has remained steady. The slide underestimates the local effort because it doesn't show the additional costs paid by cities for recycling-related services, which adds many more millions of dollars to the equation. counties have had to piece together many funding tools to meet mandates due to inadequate SCORE grant allocations. Counties may use a waste tax assessment, landfill fees, service charges, revenue from material sales, and even property tax revenue. Counties are doing their best to make it work, but costs continue to increase and funding falls short of the need. In 2022, Minnesota counties diverted over 2.7 million tons of waste to recycling and organics programs. But more can and must be done. The resources we currently have are not adequate to meet the state goals. We're losing out on opportunities because of limited resources. Additional SCORE dollars are needed to meet ever-increasing unmet waste challenges. Passage of House File 1359 to increase SCORE is truly an investment in Minnesota. The recycling industry employs over 78,000 Minnesotans and has an estimated $23.9 billion economic impact. Developing local recycling markets keeps resources, jobs, and businesses here in Minnesota. We recently passed a threshold of generating over 6 million tons of waste in our state annually. Now is the time to help us move closer to our goal of zero waste. Counties in Minnesota respectfully request that the legislature pass House File 1359 to fund recycling programs at counties and use the solid waste management tax for its original intended purpose, solving our ever-increasing solid waste management challenges here in Minnesota. I appreciate the time this morning, and certainly Commissioner Papp and I are happy to stand for any questions.
Any questions from members? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I'm not sure who can answer the question. So in the handout under the page, what says SCORE grant eligible expenditures, one of them is litter prevention. Can anybody tell me, is this education or actually picking up litter?
Who would like that one?
I'm not sure that I can, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that I can fully answer that question. I know within Washington County, we have many, many volunteer groups that adopt a highway. It's a program that we coordinate at the county level, whether that's funded with SCORE grants or not, I'm not sure. But we don't, you know, pay for that service. Those are volunteers that, and it's a very, very popular program. I think we've got limited space for additional, you know, volunteers. We do signage thanking the groups that do that litter management for us, but we can look more into whether or not SCORE grants are actually used for any of that funding, and I can get that information to you probably early next week.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I'm just, because as a county commissioner, I was on the committee, the same thing you're doing, and I was one of the committees that I especially liked because you could see an end result of getting items that should be recycled out of your ditches or whatever the case might be. And this goes, I have a question that goes back to funding. So the counties get a certain percentage, and I'm going back to this litter thing. We have other agencies that are in charge of pickup of litter. Do any other agencies qualify for any of these funds? Maybe a researcher would know. And what I'm thinking of, so MnDOT, I mean, they do some litter pickup. Department of Corrections, they have sentenced to serve, and they do some litter pickup. I'm just curious if any of these funds go to those agencies, if you have the answer for that. Thank you.
So Harder, who's your question to?
Research.
Mr. Williams. Mr. Cole.
Mr. Chair, Representative Harder, the increased dedications from this bill would entirely go to the Pollution Control Agency for funding to counties. I couldn't speak to how the revenues that go to the Environmental Fund, the 70%, are distributed, and I would need to check on that and follow up with you.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Yes, if you could follow up with something along that line, and then I can do my further research on it, that would be fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harder. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess being from Dakota County, I do have concerns anytime we're pulling money in this fund. And I get it, it goes to the general fund, but the state's on the hook for a lot of traffic that goes to our soon-to-be ski hills. We have three of these things in Dakota County, and I have two of them right, well, Invergrove and Rosemount. And I'm concerned that if we keep pulling money out of the general fund, when we need, and we need a lot of it, road repairs out there because of the heavy traffic this generates to go to these landfills, that sooner or later we won't have those funds to pay for that either. So I'm waiting to hear from my county commissioners right now to see where they're at on this, but that's a concern. Just to cover that transportation issue that we have out there, we've been fighting to get a road replaced to one of our main landfills, and it's been an uphill climb, and with this money in the general fund, that's what that would use. So just a word of thought. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Any other questions? Department? Okay. Chair Gomez, and then we'll go to the office.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Representative Johnson, for bringing this forward. This is sort of has been a victim of budgetary pressures over years, because obviously the solid waste management tax was originally intended to address waste problems across the state. And so, that's why you see strong bipartisan support for this bill kind of year after year that I've been here. And it's always just sort of a matter of the budgetary pressures, how much we're able to bit by bit try to get this money back doing what it was originally intended to do. So, we did have done some of it in the time that I was chair last session, and we'll see what we can do this year, but I appreciate the effort, and this is really important work. It impacts all of us. Communities where there are landfills, as Representative Hewitt was talking about, can really be impacted by some of the negative externalities of dealing with waste for an entire region, for a county. Thank you, and looking forward to seeing how we can push this effort forward.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. If you want to wrap it up, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Davids, members of the committee. It's important to, this is one of the tools, and one of the biggest tools needed by counties is the resources. And it was originally set up to provide the resources to the counties that are doing all the great work. Even counties that have landfills are recognizing that that is not going to last forever, that there needs to be alternate efforts made, and they're actually reaching out now to Washington. We have a recycling energy center that Ramsey County and Washington County go together. So all the garbage for these two counties, including the state fair and the capital, go there. And that was set up based on the direction to divert 75% of waste from landfills. And counties throughout the state, and especially Washington and Ramsey, have really stepped up and spent millions of dollars to achieve that. We're just asking for the resources that were set up for that so we can continue that work and continue that goal. There's been amazing, and if you ever want to see some amazing stuff, you can. I know they'd be more than happy to invite you out there to see what is going on out there with robots, diversion for organics, and even working towards anaerobic digestion that is going to bring in gas, natural gas, into the system. So there's great work going on. It also includes education, and that's what this can go to. If you see on the signs sometimes when you're driving around, is the education to let people know this stuff is available. Minnesota's waste problem isn't going away anytime soon. Unfortunately, it's only getting worse, and SCORE recycling grants are critical to this work. Any advancement made this year will increase waste management efforts, as just described by our testifiers. It's time that the revenue generated from solid waste management tax was fully dedicated to supporting these essential activities. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I would also turn your attention to, I believe in your packet, the number of cities, counties, and organizations throughout the state that are in support of this, and they see how important this is as we move forward and address this. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Johnson renews his motion that House File Number 1359 be laid over for possible inclusion in what is going to be an amazing omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Item next, let's go to Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson moves House File 290. Is there an amendment here? Yeah, there is.
Each side?
Okay, so we have Representative Anderson moves House File 290. I have one testifier, but I see two.
Question. The second is here for questions.
Okay, very good, very good. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Representative Anderson moves the A1 amendment yours, Representative Anderson?
I believe so, yep.
Okay, so Representative Anderson moves the H0290A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended in the shape the author would like. Two-year bill, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Members, House File 290 essentially would alleviate, after many, many years, as we know, of bipartisan work at the legislature, alleviates the uncollectible, extremely complex, durable medical equipment sales tax. This effort has garnered broad bipartisan support in the past, and previous chief authors of the bill are on this committee, including Representative Smith and Chair and her. And Representative Smith, thank you for signing on again. I appreciate that. Chair Davids, I believe this is the fourth or the fifth time that you've heard this bill or earlier incarnations of it. So I'd say the fifth time's a charm, hopefully. So that's the goal here. Tax policy in Minnesota has exempted all health care for over a century. Since health insurers, government, and private are under no obligation to pay sales taxes on these health care supplies and equipment, they don't. DME providers do, and they cover that cost of the sales tax. So these DME providers keep vulnerable Minnesotans safe at home during the pandemic, and it's also a care community that operates on very, very tight margins, with over 70 providers, unfortunately, going under in the state in the last decade. With that said, I'm going to leave it to my testifiers to explain the problems and the complexities of this law in detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Newman, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Jesse Newman, president of Corner Home Medical. We serve patients throughout Minnesota. And thank you for the opportunity to be here, and I'll be speaking in support of House File 290. Our industry provides services and supplies and equipment that keep people at home and maintains their independence, reduces costs, and improves their quality of life. Sales tax laws say that if an item is to be used in the home, is exempt. However, when a state auditor comes in, there are a lot of supplies and products that we provide that are confusing. The tax laws for DME providers and state auditors are, in one word, confusing. So over the years, ourselves, CHM, as well as our trade association, MAMES, are faced with tax audits that are delivered to us with oftentimes a shocking number. And there's a lot of work that goes into determining what should be paid and what should not be paid out of that original number. Our last tax audit in 2020, a COVID year, the bill due was over $100,000. And after we spent almost 500 hours of our controller's time working with the auditor from the Department of Revenue, our final tax owed was only $17,800. Previous to then, Corner Home Medical and other colleagues in the industry had developed a document because suppliers have often gone through these laborious audits and started to help with this process. After starting with the large, shocking tax bills, after a lot of time and effort by both companies and by state auditors, a much, much smaller and accurate number is arrived at. This has been going on for over 15 years now as a result of Minnesota becoming a member of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement between the states. One of the things that we were debating in 2020 was whether gloves and PPE were taxable or not, and this is during the middle of the pandemic, when those supplies were critically in short supply and those costs had skyrocketed due to their scarcity. But it takes a long time to reach these final agreements. We certainly want to pay our taxes and do what's right by the state, our patients, collect tax where it is necessary. But as I indicated, 95% of these services and products are for the patients in their home, and only about and not only that, but about 95% are billed to an insurer on behalf of the patient. So there isn't any insurance company in the state that pays sales tax when a bill is sent to them. When we first came to the legislature with this problem, after a number of years, the legislature did exempt the government insurers, Medicare and Medicaid, from paying these sales taxes. That includes Minnesota Care, Medicare Advantage plans, and PMAPs. But supplies billed through private insurance insurers are still not exempt, and that's why we're here today. In reality, it becomes a tax on the provider. The patient doesn't pay it, the insurer doesn't pay it, and it's really confusing. I have a couple of product examples to talk to you about, one of them being a stethoscope. Sounds like it could be taxable. It's not. It's clearly defined as being non-taxable. Another one is a bedpan. It's hard, plastic, durable, repeated use, used in the home. We have to debate it every time an auditor comes in whether it's taxable or not. It's not clear. So with that being said, it's that level of detail we need to go through on hundreds of thousands of transactions. Thank you for your time and attention, and we want to thank Representative Anderson and her leadership on this issue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Did you also, or you answer questions? You're a resource.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We like resources. Any questions for Mr. Newman? I think we understand the, or I understand the issue. I guess we've had this several times. And it was a gentleman from, I think, Representative Quam had the first one to try and do this back in the day, right?
Yep.
How's that for memory?
Yep.
But my bedpan isn't plastic. It's metal. If I had one. If I had one. Okay. Would the, would the department like to make any comments on this? Okay. Okay, so let's go to Chair Gomez. Okay, let's have the author wrap it up then.
Thank you, Chair Davids. This is a, you know, a very similar issue to what we heard with the landscape issue where you have, you know, it's uncertain. And it is, I know, our committee's goal to have tax policy be clear. So this will help make that clear for these health plans. So I ask for your support and thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson renews her motion that House File 290, as amended, be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you so much,
mm-hmm.
and to the testifier.
Thank you.
And the resources. Okay, so let's go to House File 1829. Let's see here. David's bill. Who's that? And I will take it from here. So, yeah, let's, if we could maybe get some of the witnesses or testifiers up there, like a Beth Klinsky, Emily Norris, Mike Bolt, and Mr. Joel Carlson. Are there enough chairs up there, Mr. Carlson? Can you grab another one?
We will make it work.
Can you grab one maybe from the... Okay, I will move House File 1829. I do not have any amendments. I don't think I do. I don't. Okay, and this bill modifies the tier limits for homestead resort properties. And let's just get right into the testimony. Who'd like to start? Mr. Carlson, if you could start.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I've had the long pleasure of representing the community of Minnesota Resorts, which is an association of family-owned seasonal resorts in Minnesota. We're here before you today, Mr. Chairman, to address the property tax system that's been in place for resorts since about 2003. And prior to that, we came to the legislature with really an assessing problem. We don't have a problem with the assessor, but they have to assess resort properties based on their highest and best use. And in many instances, the assessor will tell you that the highest and best use, while we disagree with this, is to simply break the resort up and sell it for individual development. And when you have Lakeshore that is selling for $10,000 a foot and they put that type of value on your property as a development property, it is really hard to remain in business for a seasonal property. And so the grand bargain that we, after asking for another way to do this, can't we do it by an income approach or some other way to assess these properties, we agreed in 2003 to have a tiered system of property tax for resorts. And so the first tier of your resort beyond your homestead would come in at a low value. Your second tier would come in or a low rate. The second tier would come in a little higher, and everything in the third tier and above would be taxed at 1.25%. The problem that we have right now is that these tiers have not been adjusted since 2008, and we have seen a tripling of property tax values in that time. So the bargain that we struck to try and hold these taxes down, all the life jackets you see, they're not lifesavers, they're life preservers. And what we're trying to do is preserve the resorting industry. And it isn't just for us. While it is helpful, resorts are the way that your constituents access our great outdoors. And so this bill is a step forward to help preserve resorts in Minnesota. We, at our high water mark, Mr. Chairman, we had about 3,000 resorts. When I first started doing resort work with Dutch Cragen, who just sold his resort after 85 years of family ownership, we had about 1,100. We're under 600 now. And that dramatic drop is a dramatic loss of opportunity for your constituents. And so we've got some resorters that want to present some information to you. We appreciate the committee's attention to this matter, and the authors and co-authors of this bill have been very supportive, and we appreciate you hearing us on our day on the Hill, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Why don't we just start with Beth Klinsky, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, my name is Beth Klinsky, owner and operator of Knotty Pines Resort, also a Community of Minnesota Resorts board member. Knotty Pines Resort has been in our family for 19 years. I bought it from my parents in 2021, so it is a woman-owned business. My husband and three children also help with the day-to-day operations with the maintenance and the cabin cleaning and all that fun stuff. My parents had put the resort up for sale, and it was for sale for about 5 years because they insisted that it stay a resort. And we weren't really at a place where we could take it over quite yet, but as their health declined, they were getting closer and closer to selling it off individually, like he mentioned earlier. And we saw the blood, sweat, and tears that goes into running a resort. And we've also come to like know the families that come back every year. And so we just couldn't let that go. And by keeping it a resort, we host on average 135 families in the Park Rapids area. And they're shopping at the local gift shops. They're going out to the local restaurants. They're buying their groceries at the grocery store. They're supporting the local bars, just all the different local shops. And also along with that, we bring in about $12,000 every year in sales tax. And I know for myself and my husband and many of our other resorters, we have outside jobs off the resort just to make ends meet and to put in all of the necessary upkeep of the resort. And so we obviously don't do it for the money. We do it for our guests, our families that come back every year because they want to take their kids out fishing. They want to spend all day at the beach letting the kids get sunburnt in the sand. And they want to spend their evenings, just on the dock watching the sunset over the lake, listening to the loons and the campfire sing-alongs. And it's looking up at the stars in the dark sky. Like if you look up at the stars here compared to up north, it's a completely different scene. I know we've been able to see, some of our guests have been able to see the northern lights for the first time. And it's this last year, I know we let one of our longtime guests take out our pontoon free of charge because their 12-year-old son, they knew that this would be their last chance to go fishing with him before losing his battle to cancer. And so owning and operating a resort is like one of the most wonderful jobs, and it's also the most challenging job. And so we appreciate any help and any support you can give us in what we do to keep those, our families coming up and just enjoying the summer, their week at the Summer Lake, building those core memories. Thank you. Thank you for
you,
your time.
Thank you, Ms. Klinsky. And I may have missed it here, but which lake are you on and what town or city are you by?
Yep. So we're on Boulder Lake in Nevis, Minnesota, by the Park Rapids area.
Beautiful country. I also want to let the committee and people in the audience know that we've got some beautiful resorts in southern Minnesota and Cedar Valley in Wayland. Very, very nice. Many awards go to that resort. And you might have to go further north, like up to Rochester, to hit some other ones. But, okay, so far north. Emily Norris, if I could get your lake and your town.
Yes, absolutely. Hi, I'm Emily Norris. I'm from Pamoosh Lake. We own Pamoosh Resort. It is located about 30 minutes from Bemidji. We're in a little triangle in between Cass Lake, Bemidji, and Black Duck, if you know where that is on the map in Beltrami County.
Very good.
Bemidji Resort. Thank you. Black Duck students will touch on my opinions on Black Duck and our impact to small towns.
I think Black Duck, isn't that where the next Veterans Cemetery is going to go? Because it can't go in Bemidji because then they'd have a veterans home and a veterans cemetery. So I think it's going to go to Black Duck.
I'm not tracking with that, but that would be wonderful. We would love that. So I want to talk to you a little bit about mental health, which is funny since we're here for property taxes. But in my view, that is a big part of what this resort industry is in our state. It's the history, and it is the tie to nature that businesses like ours present to your constituents, whether they live in our areas or whether they live down here. Today happens to be my 5-year anniversary of surviving corporate America, so it's weird for me to put back on, you know, a suit and talk to professionals rather than being in flannels and jeans and talking to kids about lakes and people about their families. But I feel immensely blessed. I'll tell you just a little bit about our story and how we came. I own this resort with my husband and my mother. My mom is a widowed veteran, found herself widowed in her 60s. My husband and I were in our early 30s with a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old, trying to figure out how to slow down our lives and actually be with our children. As a working mom, I had opportunities to be overseas while I had a kid having surgery stateside. And for me, a lot of us that go into resorting do it to be with our families, do it for a slower way of life, but it's also to provide something that we care about into this world, and that's been a big driver for all of us. So we found ourselves purchasing this resort in March 2020. So we were on the way to close on our house we sold as Walls was announcing the shutdowns. We were lucky enough to experience the COVID period in resorting. But it's really been such a blessing to go into this world, especially in that time period where you were stuck in your homes. You were trying to figure out what is happening in this crazy world. Unfortunately, 5 years out, it's still the same speed, different flavor of stress. But your constituents, our guests, are looking for ways to just take a break. A lot of the American dream is working really hard so that you can take that 1-week vacation and sit with your kids and look them in the eye and find out who they are again versus just after school. And that's what we see with a lot of our guests. But I don't think the guest vacation experience is the only important part of what resorts bring to this community. As I mentioned, we're outside of Black Duck, and the last few weeks we found out that Anderson Fabrics is shutting down in our town. They employ 120 people. There are 818 people in 2023. That lived in that town. So when you talk about our small school, our one grocery store, our couple of gas stations, the people that live and work and want to stay in this community, resorts are one of the few corporations, since we are corporations, that will not, cannot, do not want to pick up and move from these offshore communities. Out in the woods, big companies leave. They can pick up and leave for efficiencies. They can pick up and leave for operational costs. We can't and we don't want to. Resorts have been around for a long time. We are lucky enough to be the 5th family owners, so we're not the family that started this resort, but in 1946, two people with a GI Bill and a dream went and started cutting down trees, where I now get to welcome families back. In my 5 years, I have seen a few people leave our place and go into hospice and then be buried and have things that represent this resort because they've been coming for 50 years. I have a grandmother that comes up, makes all six of her children, all of their children, all of the grandchildren every year come and spend a week with her, and she giggles every time she writes that check, and she says, I'm spending their inheritance on us. And it's her greatest gift. One of her grandsons has been coming his whole life. He went and proposed to his fiance last spring before we were open. He just popped up, said, hey, can I go on the lake? My husband tells me later, he just proposed. They got married last fall. I mean, we are fundamental parts of people's memories and history. So while, yes, we're businesses here, sitting here saying, please help us adjust what you've already put in place to today's market rates so that we can survive, I just think resorting is such a crucial part of our state's history, our mental health, and a lot of people's lives. So I would hate to see us go down to 300 instead of 600 in the next few years. And we appreciate whatever support you have.
Thank you. Is it still the Black Duck Drakes?
Yes. Yep.
Maroon and gold?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah. Lord love a Drake.
These are important things we must talk about.
Yes, yes.
Okay, Mr. Mike Bolt, Cedar Point Resort. If you give the lake and the city you're by.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. We appreciate being here. My name is Michael Bolt. My wife is Tracy. We own Cedar Point Resort in lovely Marcel, Minnesota. We're up beautiful Highway 38 from Grand Rapids, about 28 miles, and just south of Big Fork.
That's not too far from Bowstring, is it?
No, we're very close to Bowstring.
Okay.
I'm a member and on the board of the Community of Minnesota Resorters, and I have the unique opportunity to be the legislative lead for our organization. So I get to speak with a lot of our resort owners and hear their concerns. I work with Joel Carlson very closely, and I hear the struggles that a lot of resorts go through. We're a very valuable part of our small communities. Just in Marcel, the four big resorts up there, bigger resorts, we bring 500 or 600 people every week into the community, which supports just not our resorts, but the local restaurants that are up there, the gas stations, the hardware stores, and many other small businesses that are up there. If just one of our resorts goes away, which the tendency has been, that it would have a devastating effect on our whole community. Our property taxes alone in the last 5 years I can speak for myself, our value has increased 67%, and our taxes have gone up, and that's becoming a hard number to hit. We continue to try to stabilize our prices because most of our families can't afford lakeshore homes or property, but they have a way to get away for a week, and we've had to keep our rental prices at a reasonable rate so that they can enjoy our beautiful outdoors. As property owners, and it is a burden that we are assessed at a different rate. You know, we're assessed like a residential house versus our business, and if our businesses, you know, we want to have the opportunity to be able to pass our business on or sell it to one of our family members, because this resort's been up here for 85 years, and I'd love to see one of my sons take over. But as time goes on, it's basically we're being forced into, at that time when we want to hang up our resort hat, to sell our property and divide it up into just a few landowners. As resort owners, we keep that shoreline natural, and we're all environmentalists, and we don't want to destroy the shoreline. But as new, if we sell off that property, unfortunately, everybody likes the sand beach, and you know that shoreline will be degraded down, and the quality of the lake will go down. We're here to pass on, and we want to bring that joy to the next generation. And if, you know, if we lose our resort, just the amount of sales tax that goes away would be four times the amount of what, you know, the property tax would bring in. So it's a devastating effect to the community and to the state. We want to continue to have the next generation of kids come up there. I mean, I see our resort has what right now one generation. There's four generations that come up, and I want to see the fifth generation be able to stand out on that dock and see the northern lights or chase frogs along the shoreline, enjoy things that kids don't get to see. So we really appreciate the opportunities, and thank you for your time.
And thank you, sir. Mr. Carlson, I think that as a tax committee, we may need to do a fact-finding trip to each of these resorts just to kind of check it out for a week or study. We're going to study it. Okay. So questions from members. Before we go to questions from members, department, want to weigh in on this one? Okay. Questions from members of Mr. Carlson or the three testifiers? Okay. Thank you, Chair Gomez.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for bringing this forward, and to all the testifiers for coming and sharing about your businesses and the opportunities that you provide to Minnesotans. Just one thing about this, which we sort of just have to bring up when we talk about adjusting, you know, valuations or changing tiers and changing the market value that's subject to different classification rates. The lowest tier of homestead resorts have one of the lowest classification rates in the entire property tax system, and I think there's, you know, kind of a reason for that. But you brought up Black Duck, and Black Duck is famous in the tax committee, or in my mind in the tax committee, because they are uniquely a community that has a very high property tax levy rate. So you know, and when we were looking at local option sales tax proposals, this came up because we have some, you know, some sort of more property tax wealthy communities in Minnesota that levy at a much lower rate. But when we look at Black Duck, you know, they have Mr. Swanson looked it up for me. So their city tax rate is 96%. That's the property tax levy rate. And in Edina, just picking out a random example, a very property tax wealthy community, it's 28%. And you also just talked about losing a major employer in Black Duck, which sounds really devastating to that community. And so we just when we're looking at property tax changes that many of which have almost no impact on the state general fund budget, we do have to think about the impact on local budgets and the impact on local property taxpayers, other local property taxpayers. Because although there's a little general fund cost to this because of property tax refund interactions, but there's not like a direct general fund cost to doing changes like this. But anytime you effectively take some amount of market value out of the adjusted net tax capacity of a town, you shift that levy burden onto other property taxpayers. So in this case, in the case of Black Duck, like you're talking about, those 120 folks who just lost their jobs, many of them probably own homes in Black Duck. Many of them are also probably impacted by appreciating value, which I'm glad that you brought up, because that's something that we're hearing. Literally all of us, I'm pretty sure, have heard from our constituents about this issue, because it's not just the value of resorts that's going up, it's the value of property in general. And so, you know, so people who are living on a fixed income, who own a house, who have seen these appreciations in the value of their property, have also seen attendant increases in their property tax bills. So, you know, I'm not sure where we're going to land on this, but we really do have to think carefully when we're talking about property tax shifts, to think about the budgets of local communities and the obligations that they have to meet the needs of their citizens. So in the case of Black Duck, we saw them coming here seeking a local option sales tax for like legit municipal-owned things that they are responsible for maintaining. The thing that sticks out to me is the municipal campground. And, you know, we're talking when we are, you know, even the, like you guys are, it's not anything about you and that you're not, you know, the challenges that you're facing aren't real, but everybody's facing challenges. And when we solve this problem for you, we potentially create problems for other property taxpayers. So we just need to think about that as we see, you know, we will see more of these. We have seen a lot of property tax shifts in our committee, and we have to just think really carefully about all of the other property taxpayers that will be picking up the tab when we shift that property tax burden off of one group of people or one group of properties. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Chair Gomez. Just to wrap up here, I think this is a very important bill. When you see the numbers and how many resorts there were a few years ago, how many there are now, we've got to stop the decline here somehow, and this is just a little piece that could help a little bit. So before I make the motion on this one to lay it over for possible inclusion, some very, very important information here. The Caledonia Warriors for my district play tonight against the Lake City Tigers.
Oh, trouble in paradise.
So we'll see how we're getting along tomorrow.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gomez.
What's the mascot for Caledonia?
You didn't, Warriors.
The Warriors. Okay, so that's their.
Lake
okay.
City Tigers.
Okay, thank you.
Black Duck Drakes.
You got it all worked out.
Maroon Edina Hornets.
Mr. Chair.
I love that. Crimson.
Mr.
Leafs.
Chair, like this would maybe a good time between the two of you to make some sort of a wager, like bring whoever loses bring something to the committee.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
I'm always fighting gaming, so that would not be a good precedent for me.
I don't believe that we have legalized sports gambling in Minnesota yet, so that might be out of order.
Well, I guess the wager wouldn't be legal. Okay, with that, and I also want to really thank the members. You've done a lot of great work up to this point, and there's a lot of great work yet to be done, but it'll be under a bit of a different structure where Chair Gomez and I will be co-chairs. We'll be alternating days as far as what we've talked about, or we can figure out how we want to do that. And so the first gavel will go to Chair Gomez, which should be next Tuesday. And Caledonia versus Lake City, we'll see how I'm doing. Okay, well, it could be a really good day or not so good. So I will renew my motion that House File 1829 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Anything else for the good of the order? Hearing none, the tax committee is adjourned.